Our main speaker tonight is Jeannie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jeannie. I'm an alcoholic. I'm so grateful to be here tonight. I just want to thank Nye so much for asking me to speak. And I know it was at the prodding of some others because people in the group, this is my home group, the Atlantic group, and people have heard that I'm moving away to Athens, Georgia, two weeks from yesterday. And it's so wild coming here tonight. I've been down there back and forth a lot, trying with God's help and a lot of good sponsorship and a lot of great friends supporting me to how to do this move safe, sane, and soberly, which is beyond my comprehension. Like, I'm just like, what do you mean? I gotta do it. Like, there's all kinds of things you're supposed to do if you're a normal person when you're trying to move to another state. And I just want to get a truck and throw a bunch of stuff in it and off I go. And but, you know, in fact, I put a dumb posting on Facebook, so impulsive. The plane is pulling out from the thing and goodbye, New York. And, you know, and everybody's like, wait, you left? What? I get a call from my sponsor. That was crazy. What? Like, don't you see how that harms others? Like, no. I just was so excited and I didn't think about it and I didn't stop and pause. And, you know, I got a ton of texts, a ton of messages like, wait, are you gone? Are you what the? And I'm like, no, I'm coming. That's not how you announce you're leaving your home group that you've been here for 10 years. Like, don't do it. So I'm really grateful to be sober. My sobriety date is December 7th, 2005, which means in this group to speak at this meeting, which I heard the other night called the Mothership. This is the Mothership. I love it. To speak at this meeting, you need 10 years of sobriety, but that's continuous sobriety. So just if you're wondering in the back, like, wait a minute, I have like 10 years, I'm in and out. That's me. I was in the back, in and out for probably 15 years. Lied to lots of people that I was sober. Put up my hand, even when I was here for what I thought, you know, was, I think it was like July 2005. Putting up my hand, and I'm still drunk and high as a kite, you know, and I'm thinking I have 14 days sober. And you guys all rallied around me. You didn't kick me out. So my sponsor is Debbie Y. So where do you begin? I want to try to just do a couple of little things to tell the newcomer that this person standing here is not the person that I walked in with. Joan actually reminded me what I was like in the back row. She was kind of scared of me and scared for me and said she prayed for me a lot. And I was in the back nodding out. And for some reason, I thought AA was the time to clean your purse. And like, I would be like looking through my bag and like things just falling everywhere. And then I'd be like, whoa. And then they'd prop me back up and I'd be like, whoa. And I really was like, I didn't even know. And the meeting would be over and they'd be like, it's time to go. But that's how I was in the back row. And, you know, every other word was a curse word out of my mouth. I was really, really angry. I drank and drank and drank and did a lot of other things in order to try to be as comfortably numb as I could possibly be from who I was and my life and what had happened to me. I honestly believed that a feeling would kill me. I truly believe that. I love what Neil said. He got a haircut. I actually got a manicure. And I'm wearing a suit and a nice outfit. And this is not the person that was here. Like, I was sitting in the manicure place thinking to myself how the hardest thing about this meeting is coming in here, seeing your faces, and allowing you to hold me up, and allowing you to love me, and allowing you in. That is the hardest thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, or anything I do, shoot. You know, like just allowing people to be kind. Because I always think, what's your motive? You got, you know, my old thinking when I came in here was, if you were kind to me, it's because you wanted something that I had, and it certainly wasn't sobriety. You know, it was, you know, my last dollar or my, you know, whatever, like that's the people that I ran with. And so to be here, where you don't want anything from me except for me to just give back what was given to me, I just thought it was nonsense. And I, because I didn't have anything you'd given me yet. Like, I was like, well, where is it? And then, you know, the other thing is, I thought everybody was high. I thought everybody was drunk. And I thought everybody, like, there was no way you could possibly be this happy without it being from something else other than sobriety. I really didn't understand that I had this spiritual malady so deep inside of hatred and venom that that was all directed in at me. But I used outside circumstances. So I had a traumatic childhood growing up. Does that make me an alcoholic? No. Did it contribute to it? Absolutely yes. Because when I found my first drink, all that went away. I didn't have to feel it anymore, and I could keep shoving it down. In packing my house to move to Athens, I found a letter that I had actually written to myself. I was really out of it. About how this isn't the person you were supposed to be. It's not the person you were born to be. What happened to you? And the letter was so, like, gut-wrenching that I just, you know, that's why I had to drink, and that's why I had to drink more, you know, to alleviate the pain. And, you know, there's a saying, hurt people hurt people. So the more I drank, the more I hurt myself, and then the more I hurt others, and it became this vicious cycle. One of the things that happened to me is I ended up in the Chelsea Hotel, where every good alcoholic goes to die. And I really wanted to go there. And I mean, I thought, you know, I might as well go out in a blaze and a flame of glory. And I did. I set the bed on fire. I nodded out with a cigarette between my legs, and the place went up. And for them to throw you out of the Chelsea, I mean, you know, this is Sid and Nancy. This is like, you know, this is the Chelsea, you know. I was full of holes, my inside and out. And I really thought, like this is the place I'm going to go and die. And I couldn't. God wouldn't take me. Oh, my God, Rocco, I just listened to the tape the other day of you. Anyway, sorry. it was a great tape. Anyway, so I thought, okay, I was out, and it was late, and everything had closed, and the bars had closed, and I had got a little bit of money together, and I was headed over to the Lower East Side. And the cab pulled up. It was like 6 in the morning, and I'm walking down the block. And this is just a quick story to let you know, like, where my disease took me. And I'm, you know, scouting the block and walking up and down, and nobody's out. And this guy comes over to me, and he's like, yo, psst, psst. And he talks me into going into a foyer, up into a inside a vestibule, and the door shut. And he pushes me to the ground, and he puts a gun to my head, and he says, "Give me all your money." Not such nice words. And I said, "I don't have any." I had it in my hand, in my fist. And I said, "I don't have any." And he said, "I'm going to blow your head off if you don't give me your money." And I said, please do it. Just do it. Do it. Like, just do it. I'm so done. You're not getting my money, no matter what. And he pounded me in the face, broke my nose, blood went everywhere, kicked me, broke my ribs. I laid in the foyer for a while. He left. He did not shoot me, obviously. the first thing I thought, I opened my hand and I thought, I won. I won. I won. Like, that is the power of this disease. Like, I really thought, he didn't get my money. I won. And that's just one of, like, many bottoms. I ended up in hospitals and detoxes and rehabs. In packing my apartment, I came across 8 big books. So that should let you know, each one with different years. And many have all those autographs. You know how you got a yearbook that was autographed, but you're in rehab and they're like, dear Jeannie, you know, and every page of the big book is autographed. You know, I'm like, okay. I wasn't ready. You know, I really thought I could drink when I got out of rehab, like I detoxed everything, but then I was like, but booze, I can drink. And every time I drank, I ended up right back where I started, and I didn't know where that would be, but so finally I had to really get honest about alcohol, and I had to keep it to, you know, alcohol, because alcohol starts and ends everything. It doesn't matter what happens after I have a drink. It really, the drink, I take the drink, you know, it sets up for craving, the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes me. And so if you're new, if you're still trying to figure that out, you know, welcome. Like, you know, I will not steal your bottom from you. Like, I'll let you have it, but I'm going to tell you, after you come in these rooms, your drinking's never going to be the same again. Even if you're back there cleaning out your purse, nodding out, it's seeping in. It is, you know, and it's so important that you hear that there's, I forget who talks about it. Maybe it's you, Bob, or Clint, about how there's only one step from the drunk on the other side of that door to here. I mean, there's 12, yeah. But how do we, or from even the back row. Like, the idea of me coming from there to here is absolutely incomprehensible. Like, I don't even know how that happened. I mean, I know how it happened. It happened with you. You know, I look around this room, like, I know how it happened because I was willing, you know, I was willing to say, you know, I can't. God can. You can. You've walked this path. So today, I ended up in the Chelsea Hotel. I started a fire. They threw me out, which was, how dare they? And then I walked with my white little rolly suitcase covered in, and I walked to Bellevue. And I went to Bellevue thinking, I'm so crazy. You know, this is where I belong, because nothing else, where 8 big books didn't work, nothing, you know, I need to go to Bellevue. So I walked across 23rd Street, went into Bellevue, and I didn't have enough booze in my system at the time to get in. So I didn't have any money to go buy any. So I'm walking around downstairs in the Bellevue, and this little car pulls up. This guy, Johnny, Johnny gets out, and he's like, hey, get in the back of my car. And, you know, I'm going with anybody. Sure. Where are we going? Let's go. and he takes me to ACI Detox. And, corrections and treatment. Speaking of, you must go to Anton's. And you must get a service commitment if you're, like, wondering, you know. Well, if you're new, just get a service commitment. But take a meeting into a detox. It changed my life. That was my first Atlantic Group commitment and postgraduate, which was a place that I got to take meetings. But ACI Detox was the place where you guys brought the message to me. And if you're someone who takes meetings into detoxes and rehabs and you think they're not listening, they're not. They're not. Like, they're totally not. Right? But for some reason, you know, the universe lined up in such a way that I was able to hear when Stacy S. came in and shared his story. He brought Amy D. He brought, oh my God, he brought everybody. He brought Todd. He brought, there were like 30 people, it felt like. It went one by one. Everybody shared their stories, and I could hear my story. And when I got out of there, I called Intergroup for a meeting, and they sent me to the Friday night meeting. I was like, where's this AG thing? And they sent me to the Friday night meeting on the Upper West Side, where you guys all hovered around me like little birds and took my numbers. And I was like, oh, this is like, I'm going to get a place to stay tonight. This is awesome. I just need a place. I need a bed, right? Because I was homeless. I had nowhere to go, right? They threw me out of ACI. And no, that didn't work either. Nobody took me home, but they did take me to meetings around the clock. And they did help me make a call to my dad to help get me a room just for that night. And for some reason, my dad believed this time, because I used to call all the time and be like, I'm a counselor from so-and-so, Jeannie, you know. I was crazy. Jeannie's going to go into rehab tomorrow, but she needs $500 so that I would do it all. And for some reason, my dad, he believed, because he could hear, and you know what I mean? And he put me up that night into a little hostel on the Upper West Side, and that next morning, Christine L., she came, picked me up, and took me to meetings to the next 14 days until she and Kelly and Stephanie, you were there. I mean, there were so many people, Lisa L., there were so many people that surrounded me and directed me how to get more help, because I needed a lot more help. I needed 19 months of more help in a lockdown facility. Well, it wasn't lockdown, but it was lockdown. If you tried to leave, you couldn't get back in, you know? So is locked out if you wanted a roof over your head. Then. So I went into this place for 19 months, and it was the most challenging thing I think I've ever done, if you think AA is hard. But I'll tell you what, I learned so much about myself. I really got to see the way I operated, and they called me out on my dishonest behavior. And one night, I couldn't take it anymore. They were all, you know, screaming at me because I took the coffee and I stole the donuts and, you know, I did everything you're not supposed to do, and I'm smoking in the dorm and in the room, and they put me, I ran out the door. I ended up running out of group. It's December 5th, 2005. I'm running out of the group. It's 2 days before I finally detox everything, and I'm really sick and I don't feel good, and I have no coat and I have nothing, you know, I have no money. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm at the end of the corner. It's snowing. There's a light up in the thing, and I look up and I just scream my butt off, every curse word under the word, that there's no God. If you were there, there's no, you know, you forsake me. Like, I hate you. I hate everything. I hate everybody. And then all of a sudden, I just like fell to my knees, and I just heard this little voice say, you know, go back. Like, go back. Go back up the block. You're not, where are you going? And so now once you leave a facility, you don't get back in, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. And I go back up, and I'm not going to get back in. I know it, because I left. I'm not getting back in. I'm not getting back in. I'm not getting back in. And because it was so windy and so cold, the door was popped open just the littlest bit. Like, it was still open. And I snuck in, and I stood there, and the counselor comes by, and he's like, what are you doing there? And I'm like, no, did you leave this facility? No, get in here, get on a chair. So he put me on a hard chair, which is what it's called for my punishment. And it was the first time in my life where I felt safe from myself. So know that, as uncomfortable as it was, as hard as it was, you know, this is the first time, like, coming in here, as hard as it is, like, I'm in the manicure chair, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna have to, like, see these people, like, who have totally helped me with everything in my life, and how do I thank them, and how do I, texted my friend Christine, who's a huge part of my life and my sobriety, and she said, you think they'll notice if I don't show up? And she goes, just let God show up. That wasn't the answer I wanted. So I wrote, talk to Frank. I said, Frank, you think they'll notice if I don't show up? And he goes, nah. And I said, oh my God, you're so right. Like, they're not, I mean, they might notice. But the point is that I love about this thing is that AA goes on with or without you. I mean, we need you. But at the same time, we don't need you. You know, I mean, we need you, but they, I mean, this thing goes. if you're willing. So, you know, if you have a cop of resentment in the back and you're like, oh, they didn't chase after me, they didn't come looking for me, how come they won't listen to my 10th step? How come, you know, my sponsor, I can't get her on the phone. And, you know, well, you need to go after it more. You know, you need to chase it down more. Like, we're not going to come, you know, people... It is really the only thing that stands between you in the back who's trying to count days, all the people who counted days, and me standing here are those 12 steps. That is it. That is it. We have the same resentments. We have the same hatreds. We have the same gratitude, right? We have the same people are in the same seats. It blows me away. It blows me away. If you have a resentment that the people get these seats, I'm going to tell you something. The people get these seats. When I come in the room, if I don't see Bonnie in her seat, something's wrong. Something's wrong. Like, I'm not okay. Like, this reminds me, right, of how this group is put together. Like, I thought, oh, the steering committee, they get seats, you know. Eh. Well, how come I don't get a seat? You know, save me a seat. And you know what? It is so important to know. This group, first of all, has to have a steering committee. There's just way too many people. But... second of all, it's a thankless job. Okay, just letting you know that. I've been in there because I ran that corrections and treatment. Amazing. Saved my life. We take, 14 meetings, 19 meetings a week into detoxes and rehabs? That's crazy. That commitment taught me today how to bring yoga into rehabs and detoxes. My sponsor's like, be careful with the yoga. Just say the word yoga. Everybody will hate you. Okay, I said it. Yoga. The point is that this is the microcosm of real life. You know, if you can navigate this, you can do whatever you want in your life. So I have a yoga mission called One Posture at a Time. Gee, huh, right? Because that's all... anybody can do anyway, right? You can't do them all at once, you know, and you can't do this all at once, and you can't do all two. You know, it's so incredible. I wrote a fourth step, and I got real hip to the fact that last column was going to be my amends, and I started deciding in my fourth step, when she was having me circle the names in red, that there were certain ones I wasn't going to do. There's certain ones I was going to. And then I found people to support. Yeah, you don't need to make that amends. That's crazy. Why would you ever make that amends? Like, what's the point? Exactly. Like, why? And thank God I have a sponsor who's like, how free do you want to be? And, you know, that's what it is. It's like, it's not about whether Ava thinks I need to make that amends or not, or even Debbie thinks I need to make that amends. I had a really difficult amends to the building that I lived in, where on 45 Christopher, where I actually thought there were cameras mounted outside the window, and I would look at the cameras, and I would be like, you know, trying to hide, and you know how we get blinds peeking. Well, I found out there were actually cameras on me. There were actually real cameras. There's a lawsuit. In fact, James, I had to go with Debbie over it with Debbie and James about what I do about this old lawsuit. Because I didn't know, it was crazy. It was crazy. Like, they were trying to get me out of the building, and I didn't know at that time that we had sold the apartment. And another long story, but the point is that sometimes if you think there's cameras on you, there are. Oh my God. Right? You never know. So I would go to the village and I'd be like, I do not need to make amends to that building. Like, all the stuff going on. It's a building. How do you make an amends? I'm sorry. You know, how do you make amends to a building? And my sponsor's like, well, who worked in the building? Oh. So the list from the resentment of all the doormen and the super of the building comes out, the ones that I'm like, nah. And So at one point, I walked by the building, and I'm armed. You know, I went over the amends. Don't let the amends scare you. It's one at a time. And you go over them with your sponsor. So if, like me, if you're like in four and you're like, I'm never going back again because I'm not making that amends, that's cool. You don't have to yet. And it might not even be a yet, right? Because there's a couple I haven't really prayed about and I have not made. Because that's what it came down. Like, I didn't have a part in the, I didn't do anything to that person. One is my brother. Crazy, you know, my brother, my family life was traumatic growing up. And, you know, he had harmed me in lots of different ways. And I could not come up with the amends to him. I couldn't. He's much older than me. I didn't know how to make that amends. But anyway, I'll get back to that story in a minute. But I walked to the doorman, and I have all the amends ready to 10 doormen and one super. I wish it was one more because 12. Wouldn't that sound good? But anyway. Okay. So I walk in with this whole thing of papers, and I'm like, hello, Mr. So-and-so. Jeannie, whoa, you're alive. I'm amazing. Amazing. And I'm like, I am. I said, I wondered if I could get 5 minutes of your time. Oh, sure. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is his chance now. Right? So I go, he takes me downstairs to his office. And I said, I just want to thank you so much for agreeing to meet with me. You know, these are these harms that I did. You know, I vomited in the stairwell. I was locked in the bathroom. I stole people's mail. I stole people's stuff out of the lockups. Where you put your storage. I had people laid over. I went through this whole thing. And then I said, have I left anything out? And he said, yeah. What about that little junkie that you had that came in and, like, hit Carlos over the head, another doorman? And I was like, whoa, I didn't know. I didn't know about that. And I was like, you know, my God, you know, there's just no excuse. Is there anything I can do to right my wrong? And he said, well, actually, how would you like to meet with everyone right now? And he called every doorman down one by one. I thought I was going to, and so one by one, I made my amends to every single doorman, and every single one was different. You know, every single one was like, it wasn't your fault. Look at the neighborhood. You know, if I lived here too, I would have been you. You know, this building's crazy, you know. You weren't that bad. But he did confirm the cameras. Because he's like, you have no idea what we had to try to go through to get you out of the building. I'm going to end on this last amends. I have a minute. So I was trying to really find my part with, Randy has 10 years with me too. We standing next to each other in line. Get your buddy to stand in the anniversary line together with guys, because you help keep each other accountable, you know, like, where's Randy this year? Hey, where's Jeannie this year? The last amends was my brother. And Debbie's like, well, it sounds like there's not an amends there. You know, it just sounds like that's not the amend. There's not one there. And I got a call. My brother was living out of his truck, addicted to oxys, and called me up, homeless, penniless, and was in a shelter for a while. And he's like, I never worked the steps, and I wondered if you'd agree to meet with me for an amends. And you know, the minute I let go of the amends came. Like, the minute I let go of trying to figure it out, like, no, there's not an amends there, then the universe provided, and it came back. So I want to thank everybody in this group. If it wasn't for you, I truly would not be here. I would not be standing here able to even put two sentences together. You have saved me from myself. You brought me to a higher power. You helped me do things I thought I could never do. I have people here tonight who support me in every walks of my life. And I can't thank you all enough for coming. And if you're new, please stay. It is just way too hard out. Way too hard out there. It's just way too hard. I'm so grateful, and thank you very much for my sobriety, everybody.